I'm Tommy Teebs Pico.
And I'm Drea Washington.
And we are
Scream Queen,
a podcast about scary movies.
From people not typically depicted in scary movies.
Guess what, Drea?
What?
I figured out how Freddy's gonna kill me.
What's gonna happen?
Okay, so in my dreams, this is what happens. In my dream, so it's the first day of school. And I'm like late to class because this is actually literally a stress dream that I have all the motherfucking time, in addition to not being able to find my ticket before I board the plane. But anyway, so let's just say it's the first day of school. I'm late. I'm running to class. I'm also still 35 years old. Why am I running to high school? I don't know, because I'm still me at this age. And I've got textbooks and shit. And I can't, and I'm running around the building. I can't find the front door. 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 And I'm panicking. And then I finally find it and I reach for it. Freddy opens it up and he says something like, "Don't be tardy for the party, bitch," and like stabs me in the chest with all of his knives. That's the way Freddy's gonna kill me.
Oh, wow.
Yay! Yeah, it came to me. I think I would probably... I was going to say I would probably date Freddy because he has a great sense of humor.
But
and then I thought about the implications of the whole thing.
We know
his
backstory.
But, you know, I love me a man with skin that looks like it's like a cheese pizza. Because I know he's never going to leave me.
Pizza the Hut.
Yeah. Drea, will you tell us what our act structure is going to be today?
All right. So for our act one, we're doing a Have Y'all Seen of Society. It's a little doozy of an 80s flick.
We'll get into the bullshit.
In our act two, we have Horror Noir, A History of Black Horror. Fantastic documentary that came out, was it earlier this year?
Yeah, on Shudder.
On Shudder.
Yeah.
It's mandatory viewing. And finally, our act three, we'll be talking about our Scream Queen of the Week, which is Vanessa Paradis in Knife and Heart.
Ooh, and she has... Knife and Heart. Let's just talk about her for a minute. But we'll get into it.
We will get into that.
Thank you. Take it away.
With our Have Y'all Seen or Talk Society.
Give me an era.
80s, early 90s, like right on the cusp.
Okay. Give me a tagline.
I got a few for you, actually.
Okay. Got a few for that ass?
Yeah. So here we go. This movie has 7 taglines.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. In Beverly Hills, what you fear is only the beginning.
Okay.
You are what they eat. If you don't belong, they'll eat you alive. It is not what you think it is. It is a matter of good breeding. Really. The rich have always fed off the poor. This time, it's for real.
Okay.
And finally, it's all about fitting in.
Why are these vaguely sexual?
I mean, if you really know this movie, then you understand just that's a little too dead on some of those.
Now, speaking on Beverly Hills, though, I had a Lyft driver the other day who was like, first of all, talking his face off about Ayn Rand. And I was like, I'm not here for this.
Oh,
and he was also like, I really want to move to Beverly Hills because, you know, they have almost no homeless people there. And that's like freedom to me. And I was like, one star. Sorry.
Mm-mm. Oh, yeah. Big one star. Can you give negative stars?
I think you can. Well, I mean, in my mind, absolutely got negative 5 stars. But Society. So this film is disgusting. And in order to even see the trailer, you have to do age verification because apparently it's disgusting.
It's just not for the faint of heart. You know, just suck it up. This is everybody needs to watch this shit. I'm telling you.
So I want to know what did you think? So this is it's not in the horror canon or whatever. It's like largely overlooked, and that's why, you know, Have Y'all Seen is great for pulling these relics out of the sand. But like, what led you to this film to begin with?
This is one of those films I've seen the cover a million times. Mm. Like I've always seen this cover, always seen like certain stills from it. And it's just, you know, you just kind of forget about it. It's just one of those things like, oh, that looks fucked up. And then I just don't. I didn't pay attention to it for years.
Well, one of the stills that comes up very popularly in this, and it's right in the Google search, is a face coming out of a man's butthole. What's up with that, Drea?
I mean, is that what it is? I don't know.
That's what it looks like.
I mean, again, that's just the beauty of practical effects. The makeup artists in this film were killing it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they might have gotten a little too heavy-handed with some of this shit.
So give me a little breakdown.
Okay, so we got Billy Warlock. Later on, he'd be David Hasselhoff's sidekick in Baywatch.
Mm.
But he stars as this, like, kind of out of sorts kid. He doesn't really fit in with his family in Beverly Hills.
He's adopted, right?
Yeah. I believe he's adopted. No. He's not. He's not adopted.
Oh, okay.
But he feels adopted.
Okay.
And yeah, he's never quite fitted in. Fitted in. He never quite fitted it in.
And finally,
his sister's ex-boyfriend approaches him one day saying, you know, I have some recordings of fucked up shit that's been going on. Do you want to hear this? You can't really determine what's happening on this recording, but it doesn't sound right.
It sounds like people getting it in.
Yeah, it sounds like the mother and the father and the sister.
It sounds like incest. Families fucking. Like this, his family's fucking
know.
Each other.
But you don't
They're like,
know.
Ooh, I want to have you next. I mean, it sounds like she's getting trained. She's getting Amtrak run through her. Like,
yeah. But you know, there's no way to prove this. It's just audio.
It sounds pretty damn nasty to me.
The buildup throughout the film, like, so you hear this tape and then just little slight things happen throughout the film. People's bodies are shifting in ways they probably shouldn't shift.
First of all, then he's like spying on his sister in the shower, and it's like one of those glass tiled things where you can only really make out the outline, and it looks like her back has titties.
Yeah, she got titties on her back. And why is he trying to look at his sister in the shower again?
Why
just,
she got bat titty back?
Yeah. But it's like, even if she does, like, don't go in the shower. That's your sister.
Don't go in the shower.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
There's like a heavy just. Avoidance or just like they're not even paying attention to just how inappropriate some of the shit is. This movie is wildly inappropriate,
yeah. And,
which is another reason I'm such a big fan of it. So fucked up, makes no sense. And I love seeing the 1%. I believe that this is what they honestly do behind doors. I think this is a documentary.
So let's talk about what they do behind closed doors.
I mean,
because this is where... So
the buildup.
For most of the movie, I feel like it's like a... I don't know. It's the reason why I'm so scared of Lyme's disease, because nobody will believe that he's got this knowledge, right?
Yes.
Nobody believes him.
Yes.
Which is a popular trope in horror, that like you discover something, nobody believes you. Again, like that's the subtext or whatever. But you don't really even get any of the scary shit, really, until probably the last like 10-15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all build up to the finale, the grand finale.
And it is
wild.
It is buck wild.
Buck booty buck wild.
Booty buck knuck if you booty buck wild. talk about some things that happen and
homeboy Billy Warlock finally gets, he's trying to escape his family, but they're ready to sacrifice his ass. Mm-hmm. So he makes it to the thing that he overheard in the tape. He's finally at one of these meetings, and they bring in the...
Sex parties.
Yeah. Well, we don't know that yet, Tommy.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry if I jumped the gun on that one, but it was some slapping sex parties.
The judge comes in, and and then things commence. He proceeds to watch his sister's ex-boyfriend get fucked by everybody, but they like melt into his body.
Again, it just looks like some like extra cheese pizza's happening.
And this painting actually, it was based on a Picasso called a Salvador Dali painting called the Vagina or something like that.
Okay.
And it was so if you look at the this painting, it looks like this sequence of people fucking, and it's like the blob, basically.
Yeah, so it's like they're fucking and they're eating and also becoming physically a part of him.
Yes.
Like people's noses going into people's bellies, but like attaching. It's just everyone becomes like, I don't know, like some Stretch Armstrong Play-Doh bullshit.
Yeah,
Play-Doh. Everyone becomes Play-Doh, claymation, basically. Uh-huh. And they're all just like spilling into each other.
Fisting.
And then a head comes out of a butthole.
A hand. Yeah, yeah. Well, a hand goes through a butthole through a mouth first. And then once they...
I'm so mad about this.
And then his head comes out the butthole. And then at the end, he's absorbed him completely. And he has the mole that kid had is now on his face.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, he has new skin.
On the dad.
And he's all taut. No, on the judge.
Oh, the judge.
He's all nice and new and firm and rejuvenated. And this is how they stay, like, they keep themselves going.
And in the... I mean, and then his... And then the main dude's David Warlock's family, they
take a break. The brother, the mother and father and sister, they don't even participate in that. They just go to the side room And they decide to have a little fun with each other. And that's where the butt scene comes from.
Okay.
And he's like, because he called his dad a butthead earlier in the movie.
And then his dad's face comes through a butthole.
And he's like, I guess you're right. I am a butthead.
And then the dad and the mom and the sister all merge together.
Yeah.
And they've got like hands coming out of places,
yeah,
butts and tits.
They're
in places.
They're all one thing.
I'm struggling because it was so weird. I'm struggling to actually describe it. This is something I wouldn't recommend you see, but if you are curious, you have to look.
Yeah, yeah. I recommend it.
That's because you're twisted inside. That's why.
Nah, I got it figured out. I got it figured out. And if you guys want to know what's going on in this world right now behind the scenes, then you need to watch this documentary.
Society.
This isn't some Pizzagate shit. This is real. This is real. And I'm trying to keep you all on the up. So
this isn't the deep state. This is the deep skeet.
Fair. Oh, I hate you so much. Hate that. I also want to say that the guy that did the makeup for this, his name is Screaming Mad George. He's also responsible for he did Predator, 1987, Big Trouble, Little China, Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4. He did, let's see, what else? Silent Night, Deadly Night 4.
A 4?
Yeah, there was.
Okay.
And it's a doozy. he did Beyond Reanimator, Tales from the Hood. Yeah, so he's been around. He's been doing his thing. But yeah, watch this movie, guys.
All right.
Yeah.
If we have to.
You're welcome.
All right, everybody. We're at Act 2 of this episode. Act 2. And this week we are discussing the documentary Horror Noir, A History of Black Horror, based on the book Horror Noir by Robin R. Means Coleman, written and produced by Ashley Blackwell and Danielle Burrows. It traces the history of blackness in scary movies, from Birth of a Nation to Night of the Living Dead to blaxploitation horror to People Under the Stairs, Tales from the Hood, hip-hop horror of the early aughts, and ending in Get Out and Us. Tanana Rivedu sets the stage when she says, "We've always loved horror, but unfortunately, horror hasn't always loved us." And it features interviews with lots of famous Black people in horror, including Jordan Peele, Rachel True from The Craft, Loretta Devine from Urban Legend, Keith David from The Thing, Tony Todd, The Candyman, Paula Jai Parker in Tales from the Hood, amongst many others. That really goes into detail about the ways in which cinema informs culture, reflects culture, and also how culture has informed the cinematic representations of Black people throughout the history of scary movies. So, Drea, what did you think of this flick?
So I was waiting in anticipation for this documentary since I learned about it last year. I think it should be in every film class. I think it's incredibly important. It's focused on the Black experience in films, but it's about, you know, POCs, you know, and just how we can be easily misrepresented when you don't know shit about that culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really don't have any business telling that story if you can't relate to or know, have any knowledge of it.
Yeah.
You know, just common sense kind of shit. So, you know, it starts with an unintentionally horrific film, mm-hmm, Birth of a Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're depicted as monkeys and monsters and, you know, just these evil demons, whatever. So, you know, right from the get-go, people don't see us as human beings.
Yeah.
And when you see that on TV and then you don't see these people in real life, really, you know, you start to you just believe that shit.
And those representations are often, in Birth of a Nation in particular, often not even portrayed by Black people. It's
no.
White people in blackface.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, just next level ignorance. But I really appreciated, you know, even they talk about certain films that were happy they were made, you mm-hmm know, like at least we got the opportunity, but the missteps within them,
mm-hmm,
and taking the time we still have to critique ourselves. Like when they get into blaxploitation films,
mm-hmm,
you know, that's a very polarizing subject. It was great to see sort of powerful figures, but people were also offended by, you know, a lot of this is run by white men,
mm-hmm,
and they kind of just did an over-the-top version of us, fur coats and jewelry, and sexualized you know, when we can be so much more than that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's sort of the problem when the burden of representation is put on people who don't even aren't even part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're like reflecting tropes, oftentimes racist tropes that they've seen or internalized that they don't even have a relationship to.
Yeah,
you know, I think too. I learned so much about. I learned so much in this film, and I learned so much too, like, you know, Tanana Rivadu, like we talked about in an early episode, she breaks down the different tropes of black people in horror, the
magical Negro,
superficial Negro, the first to die, and in just flat out invisibility. And I really related to that as an indigenous person, thinking about, you know, the spirit guide, the noble savage, the squaw, and invisibility. I mean... And I think, too, just as people that, like, I love movies. You know what I mean? And but there are ways in which, like, movies have done harm against communities like ours.
Oh, I mean, and just to go back, it's a sacrificial Negro.
Mm-hmm.
Not superficial, but I think, you know, although, you know, it's your own art, and you technically you can do whatever the fuck you want to. It's still a huge responsibility, and we see what the long term harm it's caused, and now we're faced with this, and it's all coming out right now. You know, I don't even need to get political. Like, we just know this has always been happening.
Mm-hmm.
People are just becoming more aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always been my existence. It's always been your existence. Like, to be a person of color in this world is to deal with, you know, just that we're completely faced with just so many adversities every single day. Mm-hmm. But that's just part of our life. We keep it going. But finally, we have the literature, the knowledge, the footage to back it up, you know, and somebody had to take that time to do that. And it's unless we do that. And that's the main thing I got from this film. We have to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not going to get done.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, too, one thing that it really pointed out to me was the ways in which cinema can be a device for talking about stuff that's going. I mean, obviously, that's not a revelation. But for example, in Tales from the Hood, you know, It's a scary anthology series, but it also, like, it was able to talk about domestic violence. It was able to talk about police brutality. It was able to talk about gang violence and stuff like that, all within the structure of a scary movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it seems like it's entertainment, but it is also shedding light on issues.
Yeah, you know, people took it as at face value, but yeah, that movie was really touching on some heavy, heavy subjects. As far as like, I mean, when in particular, Tales from the Hood, you know, like I remember as a kid, it was just like I just enjoyed the dolls and all that shit in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then going back, I was blown away by David Alan Grier's, his performance in that. And to see, that episode about police violence, and you know, those stories were solid. Like, they still hold up to this day. It got a little crazy at the end when homeboy turns into the devil and shit, but I still I'm here for it, you know. I've never actually seen which one was Pam Grier? Was she in Blackula?
She was, yeah. She, I think, was
was she was in Blackula or Scream? Blackula Scream. It was one of those, but they gave her, like, she got to be an educated woman in it, you know, and it's like, go figure.
Yeah.
She has a brain.
Yeah. Or like Son of Ngagi, where they had a black female scientist, you know what I mean? As like one of the characters in a world that wanted to like strip that from your imagination of what you could even become.
Yes.
You know, also, I think like when it did a really good job of showing in a very short period of time the reason why representation matters. And specifically, you know, I think about Scarlett Johansson. I think about Scarlett Johansson being like, you know, I could be a tree, I could be a cat, I could be a trans person, I could be whatever. Like, that's what acting is like, being other people. And it's like, that is true to a certain extent, but we're not talking about craft.
Yes.
You know, we're not talking about the art of acting. We're talking about the fact that people like you have played people like us forever,
and
we want to play ourselves now.
Yeah.
You know,
we don't need you to do that.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's not. We don't need your, you know, donate to some funds or something like that, you know, donate to some political candidates. I don't know if you need to, you know, get right with your spirit or whatever, but like, don't take roles that are meant for other people.
Mm-mm. No, it's, and you know, people, it's nice to see people like Scarlett Johansson, you know, she has to recognize her privilege and having the nerve to get mad, you know, having the nerve to get mad, like, bitch, are you, how out of touch can you be? it's ridiculous that people would even, they would even question why it's not appropriate to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know that experience.
Right.
Therefore, you have no, it doesn't matter how many books you've read.
Right.
You don't know.
Yeah. And also, like, there are ways you can prepare for different roles. Like, if you're going to be, you're going to play a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, maybe take a flight class, sit in on a cockpit sometimes. Don't let your mind wander when I say the word cockpit.
Where's your mind at, nasty?
But, you know, there are things that you can prepare for and some things that are just outside of what you can. Like, what are you going to do? Like,
there's no class. No. For how to BS.
No.
No.
And please don't.
Don't even do it.
Don't entertain that.
Don't go to your local annex and...
No. I also thought it was... So, we do Screen Queens every week, right? And a lot of times we're talking about women and people of color and stuff like that. And I think the importance of having a Sanaa Lathan, of having a Jada Pinkett in Demon Eye, of having, you know... A black hero in Get Out. I think what they were saying in this movie was that, like, then blackness shifts from being the focal point of the fear to being the hero,
mm-hmm.
you know? And suddenly we have audiences having to empathize with us the way we've always had to empathize with other people.
Yes, which I, you know, I experienced that firsthand when I, you know, seeing Get Out in the theaters. And to watch that, it was pretty joyous, honestly. Like, watching, like, old white people in the audience just busting up laughing at white people getting their heads smashed in and shit. It was like, whoa, this is okay. Y'all are applauding.
Mm-hmm.
People were getting up out of their seats, so excited, you know, to see the black man prevail.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that decision, you know, because you know how it was originally supposed to end, where where the cops show up, and you know, that would have been all over.
Yeah.
But because when he wrote it, the Black Lives Matter and all those things weren't on the rise yet.
Mm-hmm.
But since police shootings and all these things were already we were just entrenched in that shit. It's mm-hmm. always on the news.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, we need a win. You know, we don't need to see another man shot down. Like, that would have just been completely depressing.
And I also love how, in Jordan Peele, in writing that script and in adjusting the ending,
mm-hmm.
was listening.
Yeah, he's
he was still
paying
listening.
Attention.
Yeah.
He's aware of the times.
And it's like, that isn't actually that hard to do.
It's not.
It really isn't.
It's not.
People are out here doing it all the time, and they're making great work because of it.
Yeah.
Maybe, even as you are in the act of creating, you should still be an active listener.
That's how you keep up with the times.
Yeah.
You have to be aware of what's going on around you.
I think, too, so we love scary movies. We understand that one of the things about them is that fear is universal. You know, everybody feels it. But in Get Out and in that scene in particular, it was like, but different people can fear different things.
Mm-hmm.
So for a white audience, seeing the red and blue, I think would maybe be the good guys are here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The cops are here. We're going to be taken care of.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to get a statement. We're saved.
Yeah.
And other people, you see the red and blue, it's immediate anxiety because you know it's a wrap.
That's exactly where, and he knew what he was doing with that.
It was
really smart. And everybody's heart sunk in that moment. Like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was, what a great ending, you know, Lil Rel popping out. It was comedy.
Also, when Maxine Shaw, Attorney at Law, showed up in that movie, I stood up in the theater and I was like,
thank you for bringing
Max!
That up. Maxine, like, what the fuck?
Eric Alexander. I was like, that was one of my favorite scenes of all time.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. How did I forget about Queen Maxine? Can I say also, so thankful for, you know, people like Jordan Peele existing right now and the content that he's creating. You know, he's very, very honest about it. Like I said, you know, the only way we can get the films you want to see is if we make them ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was giving us those avenues, so he's created that now.
Yeah.
And he's been very, you know, just blunt about it. Mm-hmm. You know, he said I'm not going to cast white people in these main roles. Mm-hmm. These are my movies, and I can put it whoever the fuck I want to put in these movies.
Yeah.
And I want to see more black characters.
Yeah.
And people of color.
Yeah.
And yeah, he gets to do that. We both saw Us like several times.
Yeah.
And
we were supposed to, Dre and I were supposed to see it together for the first
time. And we both lied to each other.
We had both seen it a couple of times before we met up to see it, quote unquote, for the first time. We both pretended like, ooh, I didn't know that was going to happen. And afterwards, Dre was like, I got to be straight with you. I've already seen it a few times. And I was like, actually, so have I.
You know.
Yeah.
At least we were courteous enough to each other, but.
And didn't want to spoil from the beginning that we'd already knew what was happening. I really wanted you to have the experience that I had, and I think you wanted me to have the experience that you had too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're good people.
Aren't we?
A little bit.
But yeah, in a nutshell, I'm really excited to be living in these times we're living in. You know, I'm seeing more and more content that we can just constantly keep talking about on this podcast.
Lena Waithe has like a horror series coming out called Them.
Them. I just heard about that last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to look more into that because, yeah.
I'm so excited about that. And also just, you know, Jordan Peele, again, one of my favorite parts of horror noir was when he talked about The Sunken Place,
mm-hmm.
and how it was supposed to look like an empty theater.
Mm-hmm.
That like you were a black person in The Sunken Place watching your life being acted by somebody else. And that has been the experience of black people in cinema history.
Yeah.
Either it was written by a white person or directed by a white person, mm-hmm. or played by a white person.
And we
person.
Have no say in it.
Yeah. And
we're
I thought
stuck.
That was so genius.
It
I was
really
like,
is.
My dude, like my opinion of you has elevated even further.
Absolutely. And like it couldn't get any more. But
like
yeah.
it couldn't get any better. And yeah. it did.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a person with serious, like, also you could just tell how much he loves scary movies.
Yeah. There was an interview where basically he just kind of summed up his views on horror films. And, you know, when people ask you, like, what are my favorites? I mean, I state the classics because that's really what inspired me. And he, as soon as he said, like, you know, I like a lot of shit, but, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and so, I'm like, oh, this guy, I see this guy. I get this,
mm-hmm.
you know? And because I, you know, growing up, I forgot that, like, you know, it's rare to meet a black kid that likes some of the things that I like. You know, mm-hmm. I was kind of the odd one out.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's refreshing now just to know that there's a lot of people out there like me.
Yeah. And, again, I'm quoting Tanana Rivadu a lot because, like, she had a lot of really amazing things to say. And one of them was something like the history of blackness is black horror or something like that. And
yeah.
I thought, like, in terms of, I really felt
she's
that, too.
Yeah, black history is black horror.
Black history is black horror.
Yes.
And I really felt that in terms of indigeneity as well.
Yeah.
I mean, our histories are full of so much horror.
Atrocious.
You know?
Yeah.
And how to not internalize that but then it's like our histories have been horrific and we're still the villains.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That is some bullshit.
That's some gaslighting ass shit.
That is
right
some
there.
Gaslighting ass shit. And that is, if cinema is an opportunity, then it also has a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, we just can't let them have the reins anymore.
No.
I think a lot about how, like, for us in marginalized groups, for people in marginalized groups from different walks of life, like, oftentimes that cinematic representation is the only context that people have for identities. That's the only, because they don't see us, they're not on the res, they're not in the barbershop or whatever, they're not where we are.
Yeah.
And so the way that we're portrayed popularly is how they think we are. And if we're like quote unquote savage hordes on the plains, or we're all leather and feathers or mammies and maids, it becomes not only the way that whiteness sees us, but because we live in white supremacy and it starts to reflect what it consumes, it can become in a nefarious way that we see ourselves.
Yeah, it just becomes commonplace, common knowledge. And it's not. That's just, it's not factual. It's bullshit. They've gotten to control the dialogue forever. And we're finally getting, you know, the strength to take that back.
And white supremacy and oppression's ultimate expression, or one of them, is when we do its dirty work for it. You know what I mean? When we lose the imagination of ourselves and what we could be. And so this period of self-direction, that's why that's so exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because because Black people and Indigenous people have been obsessions of otherness in cinema history. I mean, in horror for a lot of times for Blackness, but also in Westerns for Indigenous people. Like, mm-hmm. those are ways in which they stoked fear in white audiences.
Yeah.
And it influences race relations today.
Yeah.
You know, because those are still in the pit of their mind. That's the way that we are.
They also, they contradict themselves because they mention in the documentary how they also need like a strong Black character to validate if something is scary or not, mm-hmm. you know? So there's like scenes where until the Black man's like, oh, you know, this is fucked up or whatever. And still till that moment happens, like in Demons, the other night we watched that homeboy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he takes charge and, you know, he's out after a while, but they want them to validate it. But it's at the same time, it's like, that's all we're good for, you know, like bait or something.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that's where the trope of the Black person is the first one dead comes from.
But that also isn't completely true. Like, there are rules to it. Because mm-hmm. I know it seems as though, because a lot of mainstream films do kill, they were constantly killing off Black people. And it's, you know, you get pissed off and you see that. But then that's context of it. Black person is always the first to die. It kind of took on a life of its own. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are kind of rules to it. Like, you got two Black people, you can only kill one of them. But sometimes they'll get carried away and mm-hmm. kill. They just take everybody out. There are these, I don't know who made up these rules, mm-hmm. but, you know, what was it we were watching the other day? We were like, so-and-so can't die in this because, Brian Tyree Henry. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, they already killed his mama. They can't kill him too.
Oh, right. You know? Yeah. I mean, I was really hoping they weren't going to. I was glad when they did not kill him off.
Yes.
But I think ultimately my takeaway from this film was that when we're in charge of our own stories, and when we have agency over the language that we use and the characters that we write and articulate how we speak, I think that's Black and Indigenous resilience. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's strength, and I think that's survival, and I think that that's us saying that we didn't choose English, mm-hmm. but look what we're about to do with it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This shit is ours now.
You have to flip the script.
Yeah. And that's us saying that not only do Black and Indigenous people have a past that y'all don't know about and a present we're speaking on, but we have a future.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that future's lit.
Rich.
Yeah. And when we have the ability to tell our own stories, you know, and the opportunity to, that's also scary because it's always like, is this the one chance we're going to get? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if this doesn't pop, does that mean that's it? Is that a wrap on Indigenous people telling stories? You know what I mean?
But I don't think it is anymore.
No, I don't think so.
We're finally infiltrating the studios in every position, you know?
Yes.
So not only are we bringing the stories, we're taking over these studios. We're taking over these roles because that's the only way we can facilitate this.
Just to be like, we matter mm-hmm. and our stories matter
yeah.
and our lives matter.
Of course. Of course.
So.
Not to everybody.
But at least to us.
Which is all that counts. All right, so our act three, we're talking about our screen queen, Miss Vanessa Paradis.
Yes.
In Knife and Heart.
A French scary movie set in the quote-unquote seedy world of late 70s French porn.
It's got a giallo Italian kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. So it feels very mid to late 70s.
And it's like this kind of gay porn troupe starts getting picked off one by one.
Yeah.
By a dude in a leather mask.
No rhyme or reason. No. But it's your standard good thriller. It feels like it could have come out, I mean, honestly, from 1970 something. Mm-hmm. They have a score by M83. Mm-hmm, dreamy as hell. It's beautiful.
It's great.
Accompanies that. It just takes that movie to a whole nother. It's like a big music video almost. And that's not like, it's not like it's a musical.
Yeah.
But it just feels like they're always performing. All right. So.
Her name is Anne.
Her name is Anne. Right. Is a producer of cheap gay porn.
Yes. And she's not a likable character.
No.
And I like that about
yeah,
her.
Yeah. She's really unlikable, but it's real. It's honest. She's struggling with things. And honestly, this feels like a role that was probably a man would typically play.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like it's messy and She's aggressive. She's mm-hmm. trying to win back her partner, Lois.
Yeah, who's an editor, I think.
Yes, who is her editor and companion. And
it's also like this entire world is populated by queer people.
Yes.
Except the police.
Yeah.
Allegedly. But I mean, well, let's get into that in a second. But I think in terms of a scary movie, like a relationship, or a story about someone trying to reclaim a relationship with a scary movie in the background, I loved as subtext, because mm-hmm. in the way that you don't know if the relationship is going to make it, you also don't know if some of the characters are going to make it. Mm-hmm. So there's like the tension of the conflict between Anna and Lois. And then also the literal physical conflict of like this murderer kind of coming with a black dildo, by the way,
with a razor
sticking out of it, yeah. which as a way to die. I don't want to go like that. Like the yeah. first death, I was almost out of it. It was
a doozy.
This guy gets effed in the B by this dildo with the razor blade in it, and death by butt sex is something that I fear all the time.
Oh,
you know, as I'm not going to blow up anybody's spot or anything like that, but I am in some group chats where people are talking about like the, you know, small tears that one sometimes gets during anal sex and the ways in which to remedy them. So having the blade in it, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to take a walk around the block on this one. You know, I'm going to go pet the cat maybe for a second, then come back to this movie, because that was a doozy.
and that right there, that scene reminded me of just the movie Stage Fright came to mind. I was telling you about this.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like you
scary
call it
fame.
Scary fame.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's like half musical and then just fucked up. Really awesome with gruesome violence. Like just really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed that about this film, because the gore is like the blood is very lush. Doesn't really, you know, that's the beauty of like a giallo film. It's like it's almost not real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even though it's violent, it's also kind of beautiful in a way, because it's done like art, you know.
Yeah,
there's real thought and care behind it.
Yeah, and there's sort of, it goes in between being a movie within a movie, because there are like pornos that she's producing that are reflecting things that are happening in the mm-hmm. real world, like people dying. She produces like a series of films that are like with starring the characters that have been killed.
Yeah, she keeps picking out these young boys that she finds who would be perfect for her movies, and then they start getting killed off.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, some of these people, I was like, in 10 years, you're going to be very cute.
But right now, you're jail bait.
They looked very young.
Jail
bait. And I was
bait.
Like, I don't know how I feel about this. but also, like, her character in the film is relatable, even as she's not quote unquote likable. I hate that. I hate the term
likable, likability, whatever.
I feel like that only applies to women in film.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, so nobody cares if a man isn't likable.
Exactly. That's why it was so special to see a woman in this kind of role, where she, again, gets to be messy, gets to be going through her alcoholism
mm-hmm.
and she's really bad at relationships, clearly, or she's very, she's very insecure about certain things. There's a whole lot going on with her, and you see the cycle. And she's also just like kind of amazing to look at.
Yeah.
Her face is so like, how to compliment it. It's strange.
It is very strange. I mean, I think it's like beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I like this. It's like whatever, unconventional beauty. I just think her face is just, it's so, everything about it is very real to me.
Did you know that Vanessa Paradis, the person, actually is a spokesperson for Chanel?
Yeah, you know, she is quite a renaissance woman. She's mm-hmm. done a little bit of everything.
She had an album written for her by Serge Gainsbourg. She dated Lenny Kravitz in the 90s, and he produced her first English language album.
Mm-hmm.
She was married to Johnny Depp for a messy years, and they have a couple of kids.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe married. I'm not actually sure if they're married or not, but they do have a couple of kids together.
Yeah.
And she's a singer. And I remember thinking, like, as I was watching this, like, I thought she had such a beautiful voice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that tone.
Yeah,
you can tell.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know she was a singer, but I was just like, I was very lulled by it. But also it's like the tone is even and also expressive,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I thought was just like a strength of her character. And I don't know, breath control or some other shit. I didn't realize that she had a whole other singing career and like tours internationally all the motherfucking time. But that's
she out there doing it.
Yeah. I think too, the scenes with the cops were very tense and were it like existentially sad, because, you know, we know this, but the police aren't actually there to protect the most vulnerable people. You know, like these people who are doing sex work, they can't go to the police. They have to figure it out on their own. Because mm-hmm. anytime they try, the police like, well, you're fucking whores. Like, we don't care about you, yeah. you know? And like, that is so frustrating. Like, that's, I think of it as being an existential frustration. Because you're just like, how are we the most marginalized people in society, or among the most marginalized people in society, and therefore the most vulnerable, and have nobody and no recourse on our side?
Yeah. How the shit does that work?
You know, in this world, this isn't a just world. But anyway, not to get back on my bullshit, but Vanessa Paradis in Knife and Heart, check it out. You're our scream queen this week.
That is our vote.
Mm-hmm.
Scream Queen is produced by Alexandra De Palma and Domino Sound, with theme music by Doc Allison. I'm Joya Washington. You can find me on Instagram at HeyGirlHey. That's HeyGirlHey. And you can also find us on Instagram at Scream Queen Podcast.
I'm Tommy Teebs Pico, and you can find me at Hey Teebs, HeyTeebs, on all relevant social media, and find us online at ScreamQueenPodcast.com.
In the scary movie of your life,
you better Scream Queen.
There we go.